Capitol House Finance Committee meeting to order. Today is Tuesday, March 17th, 2020, and the time is 3:17. Members present, Representative Knopp, Representative Laban, Vice Chair Ortiz, Co-Chair Foster, Representative Josephson, Representative Wall, Representative Merrick, and myself, Representative Johnston. On today's agenda, we'll be hearing House Bill 79, the Peace Officer Firefighter Retire Benefits Bill, House Bill 268, the Muni Bond Bank Bill, and House Bill 181, Public Schools Mental Health Education. And Representative Carpenter joined us. We'll be taking up House Bill 70, and Representative Tilton and Representative Sullivan Leonard have joined us. We'll be taking up House Bill 79 first. And I'm not sure if you heard on the floor, but we will be adjourning today at 4:30 due to some, there's another committee that's going to be using this room and some meetings that we have. So we'll be going from now till 4:30 and get through as much of the agenda as we possibly can. We can have a brief reintroduction of House Bill 79 by Representative Kopp and his staff, Ken Truitt. Would you like to come to the table and introduce yourself for the record?
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Co-Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Chuck Kopp, House District Representative for District 24. I have with me my team member, Mr. Ken Truitt. Madam Co-Chair, just as a brief reminder to the committee, House Bill 79 is a hybrid between a defined pension system and the Tier 4 system. We feel like it achieves, and the actuaries have testified, pretty much the best possible mediated route between what we're trying to get away from, a system that costs too much, and the problem of public safety turnover in the 0 to 5 year range and leaving the state. It has a number of cost control factors that keep the plan as bulletproof as possible. We, just to remind the committee, the actuaries said that they had to work really hard to break the model. It remained, even under difficult market circumstances, I think they said 99.3% funded. So we realize that any retirement plan costs something, but we feel like this is the one that could really result in a better future for Alaska's public safety, and in the middle of the situation we're in now, where we are really relying on our folks. I think this is a good approach. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Is there any committee discussion or questions? We do have online David Kirshner with Buck Global, Kevin Worley, and Kathy Lee with the Division of Retirement and Benefits. Representative Knopp.
For the sponsor, Madam Chair, I'm a little ambiguous yet, the conversation we had about if this grows, if we have more and more members, does it put more and more risk on? Always my concern has been that we're not including all state employees in this. I've never liked the fact that we're taking a select group and not everybody that works for the state that needs this retirement. As you guys all understand this, I wouldn't explain it to you. But I remember having comments about as it grows, it puts a little bit more jeopardy, more risk. Did I hear that correctly?
Through the chair, Representative Knopp, if we added a significant greater pool of employees, it would grow the risk. So the fact that this is a small group of employees definitely contains that.
Follow up?
So thank you, Madam Chair. So, Representative Knopp, so therein lies my problem is I've already had teachers' associations and other members tell me they're just waiting for this to pass so they can jump on the bandwagon. So what's the solution for when they come forward? A whole separate another plan for that group? Or what are your thoughts? Are we going to continue to tell the rest of the employees that work for the state, no, you can't participate in this plan? And
through the chair, Representative Knopp, so we're kind of between the devil and the deep blue sea on this issue. we have targeted probably the most sensitive job class in the state to turnover. We saw how AST approached it with just a massive, basically hiring bonus. They could just considerably raise their wages. That helps on the recruitment end. It's the retention end is more where this is aimed at. I feel like we have to prove a model that actually works. Also, this model couldn't be carried over identically to the TER system. It would have to be restructured for that. We'd have to see the modeling for that. That's a significantly larger group of employees, and they also contribute differently over a longer period of time. And I really couldn't say how all that analysis would turn out. But thank you for the question. But Madam Chair, I would just say, just reminding us back to the training costs of turnover, and I know we spoke about this earlier, but with just a 2% turnover in employees, and DOC testified they have upwards of 10% in some years, but with just a 2% employee turnover, just comparing state costs in lost training to state increased costs with this retirement, the state would save more in saved training costs in just a 2% turnover. If it was a 10% turnover, the difference is $3.5 million increase total to the system versus a $14.5 million cost in lost training to the state. So not looking at municipal employees, but just state cost to state costs, we project this will actually save the state a considerable amount of money.
Follow-up, Madam Chair.
Follow-up.
So, Representative Kopp, so when this bill was originally rolled out, if I recall, and it's been a while, it seemed to me like instead of public safety employees, it was first responders. And first responders was pretty broad. Did we fix that, or where's that at now? First responders included some volunteers, some municipal a combination. So,
through the chair, Representative Knopp, thank you for the question. So it is eligible employees would be police, firefighters, troopers, Department of Corrections personnel.
Thank you.
Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As a follow-up to Representative Knopp's question, Representative Kopp, could you give me you probably have already done this, but could you give me a reminder or what are the factors that would make an expansion of the amount of, let's say we chose to increase the amount of people participating in a similar plan or same plan, what is it that makes an increasing amount make it more risky to the fund? Because obviously if you have more members, then you have more contributing members too into the system. So why is it that just because you have an increasing amount, it increases the risk?
Mm-hmm. Through the chair, Representative Ortiz. So I think it was Kirshner from Buck Associates spoke.
And Mr. Kirshner is online.
He would be great one, Madam Chair. Yeah.
Did you hear the question, Mr. Kirshner?
Yes, I did. Thank you. This is David Kirshner from Buck. A couple of thoughts. I'd like to respond to the question and then also make a comment about an earlier comment that was just made. The response to the question, the risk to the state is that as the defined benefit plan gets larger, and it would get larger by the peace officer firefighters transferring from the current DCR plan into the DB plan, and then it would continue to grow as new hires, new peace officer firefighter hires would also enter the defined benefit plan. So the defined benefit plan in terms of its liabilities and assets will get larger and larger and larger. And as the assets and liabilities become larger, any adverse experience like we're seeing now with the COVID-19 market losses, as the size of the plan gets larger, any adverse experience creates a larger loss, and that larger loss will then have to be made up by the state via higher additional state contributions. So that's how the risk to the state increases as the defined benefit plan gets larger. Does that help answer that question?
Yes, thank you.
Mr. Kirshner, this is...
Yes, if I may, I just want to make a comment that, you know, the projections that we had done that resulted in the new HB 79 trust being well-funded, you know, that was all before what we've been seeing over the last week or so with the market. So if, and we were starting with our June 30, 2018 asset values and projecting those forward. And so if we were to collect current asset values and redo those projections, we would see a completely different result because we have, the plan has no doubt suffered significant asset losses. And so if we were to use more current asset values, we would not see the plan as well funded. And as a result, I believe we would see higher increases in additional state contributions than we projected in the fiscal note, because those projections in the fiscal note did not anticipate the large losses that we've seen over the last 7 to 10 days.
Representative Kopp?
Yes, Madam Chair, just responding to that, there's no actuarial analysis that does an analysis based on one devastating week in the market. It's true, it has been a tough week and there's been a reset, but analysis are done over an annual period of time. Just wanted to point that out.
Mr. Kirshner, this is Chair Johnston. And as far as adding to the population in your actuarials, would it make any difference if that population base tended towards longer years of employment? What I'm suggesting is this pilot program has employees that tend to retire close to the 20-year retirement period versus maybe, let's say, the teachers who might teach for 30, 35 years. Would that make a difference in your actuarial report?
Well, yes, it does make a difference, but the projections that we have already done take those factors into consideration because we in all of our projections, the peace officer, firefighter members who would be coming into the defined benefit plan, we have already factored in that they would retire at earlier ages than, for example, teachers or other employees. So that's already taken into account in our analysis.
Yes, and in follow-up to that, I guess that was my question. If we added to this population with other populations that tended to work longer periods of time so that they weren't close to that 20 and 25 year retirement, would that change actuarially your report?
Well, if we were to look at a different population coming into the defined benefit plan, for example, teachers, yes, the liabilities that would be the projected liabilities that would be added because of the teachers would be lower, all other things being equal, than what we've projected for the peace officer firefighters for the very reason that you just stated, because the peace officer and firefighters tend to retire at earlier ages than the teachers would, for example. So if everything else, if all of the benefit levels and plan provisions and things like that were the same, the liabilities being added would be lower if we were adding teachers as opposed to peace officer and firefighters.
Representative Lebon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Kirshner, since we're talking a little bit about market risk, are you aware of any other defined benefit plans across the nation where the risk of holding the plan intact between both the state and the participants is a shared responsibility? In other words, if there needs to be an adjustment in the rate paid by the state, then the participant would also experience an adjustment in the rate that they pay into the plan?
Uh, Usually, the participant the contributions that participants pay, that members pay, are fixed amounts and are not typically tied to the performance of the plan assets, for example. Sometimes cost of living adjustments, COLA benefits, COLA increases might be tied to the performance of the plan, but typically member contributions are fixed, and therefore, unless the statutes were changed to increase the member contributions, since the member contributions are typically fixed, any market losses would fall to the employer, the employers, or the state, because they have to make up that difference unless the participant contributions were increased by a plan amendment or by a change in the statute.
Follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So in your experience, it has just never been typical for that risk to be shared by both, in this case, the state of Alaska and the participants, should there be a failure of the actuary to guess right, to predict right, and to be able to fund the benefits as promised?
Yes. Typically, in a defined benefit plan where there are contributions from both the members and the plan sponsor, be that the employers or the state or both, typically the investment risk and other risks that that would be adverse to the plan, that risk typically falls, does not fall to the participant. It typically falls to the plan sponsor, the employers, or the state.
Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The market conditions being what they are, I don't have numbers sitting in front of me to reference your statement earlier. So I'm going to go back to that and ask that you help me better understand. If you ran, you said something to the effect that if you ran the numbers today, that what we're looking at now wouldn't work. And so, what would it take to make it work today?
Well, when I say it wouldn't work, all I can say is that the projections that we have performed would be much different if we were to use current asset values, because the HB 79 trust would not be as well funded as we have currently projected to be. So the costs for the HB 79 group would be higher than what we have calculated, but whether they would be significantly higher to cause more money to be diverted away from the defined benefit trust, I can't say without actually doing some analysis.
Follow up.
When you say that there would be additional cost, is that additional cost to the member or additional cost to the state or both?
Well, the cost to the under the provisions of the proposed plan HB 79 bill, the contributions by the members, which are at 8%, can be increased to no more than 10% by action of the Alaska Retirement Management Board. There's no formula for increasing the member contributions. That's a discretionary decision that the board would make. So there's no automatic increase for poor plan performance. For example, there is a provision within the proposed bill that says if the HB 79 trust falls below 90% funded, then the PRPA, the post-retirement pension adjustments, which are tied to inflation index, those benefits would not be paid. That's an automatic cutback, but the increase in the member contributions would have to be as a result of action taken by the board.
So follow up, Madam Chair.
Follow up.
Are you suggesting that because of the current conditions, the board would be faced with making that decision immediately to increase the individual contribution to 10% right out the gate?
Well, there's no simple answer to that question. That what we can say is that we would likely be less than 90% funded if we were to use current asset values as opposed to the asset values that we included in our projections. So if that were the case, then we would have to be instructed as to how much to increase the employee contributions by, because there's no set provision in the bill that says if the plan falls by such and such a percentage, the increase goes, you know, the member contributions are increased from, say, 8% to 8.5%. It just says it's at the discretion of the board, but they cannot be increased by more to more than 10% based on the proposed bill.
And another follow-up. I guess I'm a little frustrated that I can't see the numbers in front of me, and so my questions to you are just trying to seek clarity here. But we've got levers and mechanisms that are supposed to kick into effect to ensure that the plan remains solvent in times that we're experiencing right now, right out the gate. And so I'm hesitant to, Madam Chairman, how can I make a decision about whether to support this or not going forward if we're being told that it appears that the mechanisms that we have in place aren't going to do what we say it's going to do right out the gate? I don't have that sitting before me, but I think I hear that over the phone.
Representative Cobb.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think it's important for Representative Carpenter asked some good questions, but I want to provide a very important clarifying point, is that the plan will start 100% funded no matter what, because people have to buy into the plan, and that's based on a sound actuarial analysis based on how much time can you actually buy based on assets that you've accrued. So if you're coming over from Tier 4, they're gonna base it on current market conditions, and they're gonna say you're probably only gonna get a limited amount of time in this plan based on what you serve, because it's based on what your value is now in your asset. So no matter what, the plan will start 100% funded. It just means it's even harder on employees. Under current market conditions, they won't get as much time in the plan. If they decide to go with it, their time accrued will just be worth much less. But it will start at 100% funded, whatever that base is.
And a follow-up, if I may. So we start at 100% funded. Does that also mean then that potentially employees would choose not to because their benefit would be less under this new plan than they currently have?
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, that will be true for some employees, yes.
Okay.
Representative.
Madam Chair.
Yes?
This is David Kirshner. If I can just respond to that, just to clarify, the amount of service that participants who are transferring from the DCR plan to the DB plan will get has nothing to do with the assets in the plan. It has to do with the value of the present value or the liability associated with their projected benefits, and that's independent of whether we have 100% funding or 50% funding. The liability is what it is, and so the amount of service that and amount of money that has to come from their DC account balances to purchase that service is independent of the asset amounts in the plan. I just want to make sure that the fluctuation or the loss, the asset losses due to recent market conditions, that will likely affect their defined contribution account balances, but it won't affect the assets in the plan or their that we projected, because the amount of the amount that they have to transfer from their defined contribution accounts is dependent on the liability associated with their service, and that's independent of asset values. So I guess what I'm trying to communicate is that the projections that we did for the fiscal note were before we saw what was happening, what has happened with market conditions. And I just want to make sure that everyone is aware that if we did an analysis using current asset values, we could come up with a different answer. And that's exactly the point that I was trying to make earlier, is that when you have benefits provided within a defined benefit plan as opposed to a defined contribution plan, the risk of adverse asset experience falls not to the participants but to the plan sponsor. And in this case, because the contribution rates that employers are paying is capped as fixed at 22%, any losses because of poor asset performance goes directly to the additional state contributions, because that's where those losses get made up through the additional state contributions.
Follow up?
And those, when you say made up with additional state contributions, that is in the out years. That is not this year. That is years in the future, a decade, whatever the individual goes to retire.
Well, the FY22 additional state contributions will be affected by the current fiscal year that we're in terms of asset performance. So if the assets lose, let's say, between 7/1/19 and 6/30/20, so fiscal 20 that we're in currently, if the market return on those assets is, let's say, negative 25%, that will affect the additional state contributions starting in FY22 and the next several years after that. So FY22 will be the first year that the current year's market losses would be felt or affected by.
And there's no projection at this time as to what that number is going to be?
We have not done any projections based on recent market performance, no.
Thank you for indulging me, Madam Chair.
Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, So I think for the sponsor, actually. So it sounds like when, for example, if you had a 35-year-old, to me, young man, who had been a firefighter for 13 years, started at age 22, and they wanted to move their DC asset and service credit to this new plan, the administrator may say, we've run the calculation based on the current value, and we're giving you 10.2 years of credit, and they would have to work longer to get to the 20 years, right? I mean, am I right that there would be an analysis and they would have to make the plan whole, and there certainly wouldn't be a year-for-year service credit?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, you are correct.
Representative Knopp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So many of my questions were already answered by previous members up here, and Representative Jolson just asked, I think, one of the final ones. But for Mr. Kirshner, I guess I'm kind of wondering, when you talked about asset value, and I think my question is, are we fortunate today that we didn't create this plan, say, 60 days ago or a month ago, when we had, I'm going to say, artificially inflated asset values? And then this crash came. Would we be looking at some serious pension liabilities at this point? Because you mentioned that employee contribution is going to be raised 2%. So with this serious crash, so I guess the question really is, are we fortunate that we didn't pass this 30 or 60 days ago when values were still high? And if we could make it up today, would we be served better now that asset values are more in line with reality?
Well, I think the best answer I can give to that is that if we were to redo the analysis now, based on what we know has happened to the market, the defined contribution account balances that would potentially be available to purchase service would be significantly lower, just like my 401k assets are I haven't checked, but they're probably down 25% year to date. So the defined contribution balances that we use for the fiscal note analysis were as of 6/30/18. That's when all the data was as of. So if we were to collect current account balances that have now dropped significantly over the last week or so, we would get less service that would be able to be purchased by those account balances, because again, those are dependent on the liabilities associated with the service, not the assets. So we would get a different answer potentially, and you know how that would translate to the bottom line in terms of whether the impact on the additional state contributions would be similar to what we did in the fiscal note. It's hard to say, but this is the reason why I've been trying to communicate that the risk to the state is increased when we in a defined benefit arrangement rather than a defined contribution arrangement. And so because we have seen what we've seen in terms of asset declines over the last week or so, the analysis that we did over the last several months could produce very different results if we were to do it now based on current data.
Okay, thank
and
you.
Current account balances, which would be much lower. And current asset values, which would be much lower.
Representative Josephson.
Through the chair for Mr. Kirshner, if I've got your name right. Your analysis, however, would apply also to existing Tier 1, 2, and 3 plans, correct? In other words...
Yes, that's correct.
Can we have a brief
So our starting point, our current additional state contributions that we've projected starting in FY22 would be higher than what we have already projected because we know we've got lower assets and we have to make up that loss.
A brief at ease. Back to order. Representative Carpenter.
Question for Mr. Kirchner. He's repeated, you have repeated multiple times that the numbers would be different, or the projections would be different now if we used current market levels. My understanding of the plan is that we have created levers and mechanisms so that if we just fast forward 10 years and we encountered something like what we've encountered now, that those levers and mechanisms are supposed to keep the plan solvent. And so I'm having a hard time understanding why, if we've got levers and mechanisms that are supposed to weather a storm like this into the future, where are we right now?
Waiting for the fiscal year for the annual actuarial evaluation.
Is that for Mr. Kirshner or for the sponsor?
This is what they do right now.
Did you get the question, Mr. Kirshner?
Go ahead, Kevin.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
With him being offline, we can offer a response if you wish.
Representative Kopp.
Go ahead.
Through the chair, this is Ken Truitt for the record, staff to Representative Kopp. Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, and members of the committee. Currently in statute, the ARM board is supposed to make an annual actuarial valuation. So where we would be waiting for the fiscal year to close to make the annual actuarial evaluation to see how the plan is performing. That feature of the annual actuarial evaluation was put in to the statutes after the creation of tier four, precisely because the state had gone a number of years without having an actuarial evaluation of its assets. So built into the current PERS plan, the current PERS system, is the annual actuarial evaluation of how the assets are performing and how they're doing. So where we would be waiting for the year end to close to see how the plan performed over the whole year.
So I guess what I'm trying to get at is we've been presented with a plan that has got a significant risk to the state, and we're saying we're going to mitigate that risk by mechanisms and levers that can get actuated at certain times. But it's escaping me how that doesn't increase the cost to the state later, if it's going to increase the cost of the state today when we get started. We've had a downturn in the economy, downturn in the stock market, and we're looking at an increased cost in fiscal year 22, and the levers aren't going to prevent that from happening. We would have to pay more in 22 than we said we were going to have to pay last year when we were talking about instituting this. And so the levers and mechanisms don't give me any confidence that in 10 years, we're not going to be having the same conversation with an increased liability to the state. The levers and mechanisms is the piece that is supposed to prevent or reduce the risk in the future. And it isn't even reducing the risk of additional liability, and we haven't even started it yet. So that's what I don't understand.
Through the chair, so Representative Carpenter, the modeling showed a 5% growth of the fund over 10 years. So you could look at zero growth. In other words, you know, I think what we're looking at is we're looking at it through a micro lens of what just happened versus looking up at the horizon and realizing that the COVID-19 issue we're in is going to stabilize. And when we come into this summer and this fall, we know markets will stabilize. But I think making a decision with a very small risk pool of employees based on a momentary market difficulty, that it doesn't make Tier 4 any better or lessen the need for change. In fact, a market downturn, I would argue, would increase the probability of more employee turnover, which the bill is trying to address. When we look at the stable plans, like the state of Washington's law enforcement officer and firefighter fund, which they've testified to, they're going to weather this storm. They're the ones that are looking at being 110% funded, because other than looking at a catastrophic market situation, which, you know, you don't plan for worst case scenario, lowest frequency possible that could occur. Do they occur? Yes. But that's if you have a healthy fund built up over time, it'll weather those. So I'm just saying it is unfortunate that happened. Absolutely. But if we are going to take our turnover situation seriously, I think we have to keep our eyes on the horizon and look out past the middle of the storm that we're in now and say, are we willing to recognize that this is pretty much the most conservative plan that we can come up with that will reduce the high-risk turnover that our departments are saying? And if you don't believe it's high-risk, then that's just a policy call. But there's no public safety agency in Alaska that will tell you it's not high-risk. Our public safety agencies are in a crisis mode right now. And just the savings in training dollars kept in the state under the previous modeling was significantly greater than the cost of the plan. Now, I agree that with the downturn, it's been pointed out by Mr. Kirshner that we're in a tough spot right now. But even in 3 months, we don't know how things will be. But I submit to you, looking at what's happened in other countries around the world as COVID-19 has moved in, you know, things are going to stabilize. So I wouldn't want to get caught up in the moment of where the market's at now and making a decision on this legislation. Thank you.
Follow up. Your crystal ball is as good as mine, and they're both cloudy. It is not appropriate to say that the markets are going to stabilize. Maybe over 10 years they will stabilize, but we do not know what's going to happen between now and December of this year. We have no idea. If anything, this event that is happening right now ought to prove to us that increasing risk to the state of future obligations is not a wise thing to do, especially to a state who doesn't have a balanced budget and doesn't have a long-term fiscal future yet that is bright. We are still struggling to figure that out. And adding to that burden now, this ought to be proof positive that increasing that risk in the future is a bad policy decision. So yes, if that's where we leave it as a policy decision and we're going to vote to see who agrees and who disagrees, then that's where we're at. But I it was interesting. I had a conversation with a young police officer on the plane flying down here, and he obviously did not know I was in the midst of having these conversations, so I just kind of quizzed him. And his police department has a number of police officers that have moved here from out of state. They have a high turnover. They have had a high turnover. It is a kind of a revolving door of coming in and leaving for various reasons. And I asked him if he's happy with his tier four retirement, because that's where he's at. And he said, yes. I said, is there a drawback to this? Would you rather move to a tier? And he brought up the tiers of the previous, the members with longer longevity that were in like a tier three. And he said, I'm not sure, because if for some reason I had to leave the state of Alaska, I wouldn't be able to take my retirement with me. And so where I'm at now means that with that life change or whatever, then I would be able to move on. So I remember the conversation that we had a year ago regarding the state troopers, and they were having a challenge in recruiting. And the message then was, we've got to do this now to solve this recruiting problem. And they've made a great stride to improving their recruitment, and we never passed this. So it begs the question, is this the only answer to it solving retention, or are there other answers out there? We just have blinders on and only want to focus on this. So with that, I'll shut up now.
Are there any other questions or concerns?
Madam Chair.
Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess what we're talking about here with the current market crash would most closely resemble scenario three, where we have 5 years of zero growth followed by 5 years of 2% growth. I don't have a crystal ball either, but as was explained to us in the last meeting, that was pretty dire, of 5 years of zero growth. And I know we've had negative growth in the last month. I'm assuming at some point it will bounce back, and I know even on a particular day here or there, and maybe it'll take a year or two or five or more. I know the 08 crash bounced back eventually, and I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but it wasn't 10 years. But, and I'm just looking at the two scenario threes, both, or the scenario three for both the current and the HB 79. In current scenario three, so if we do nothing, then we will have, after 20 years, a $14.2 billion expense. And under HB 79, it would be 15.8, a difference of 1.6. So although 1.6 seems a large number, I think it's about 11% of 14.2. So it is an increase. 1.6 looks like a lot of money, but if we do nothing, or if we stay in this current situation, a scenario three will also bring along a $14.2 billion added expense that we were currently in. So I guess I just wanted to point that out. And either way, scenario three is dire. And hopefully we don't go into that scenario. And even though we are in a rough scenario right now, I hope it rights itself before years. And I guess that's about all I have to say. And I guess for Mr. Kirshner, I know there are levers, and maybe it's been asked already, but the levers in place would, I guess they would be activated in this scenario three. Your numbers are taking into consideration the levers, correct?
Yes, the scenario three, well, all scenarios, but scenario three was the only one where it kicked in, where the HB 79 trust was projected to be less than 90% funded in a few years. And so the only lever that kicks in that we've reflected is the elimination of the PRPA benefits when the plan is less than 90% funded. But we did not increase the member contributions in scenario three, because again, that would be a discretionary decision by the board and whether they would increase them at all. But if they were to increase them, they might increase them to 9%, 9.5%, 10%. That's an unknown. So we did not reflect any adjustment to the member contributions, but we did reflect the elimination of the PRPA in scenario three when the plan was projected to be less than 90% funded.
Follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So if the employee contribution went up in a scenario three situation, let's say to 10% or whatever the max it can go up to, would that alleviate the state liability that we see under the column, scenario three column?
Yes, the increase, some of that increase that you're seeing in scenario three would fall to the higher member contributions, for example, 10% rather than 8%, and to the extent that those amounts were increased, those contributions, then the cost to the state would be less than what we've projected here.
Follow up. Do you know what it would be in relation to the current situation? In other words, after 20 years in the current situation of scenario three, we'd have a $14.2 billion deficit. And if the member contribution went up to 10%, what would that number, what would the difference be? I see 1.6 billion right now. You're saying that number would go down. Do you know what that number would be? Did you model that one out?
Well, just to clarify, in the current columns, the three scenarios, there are no adjustments to employee contributions. The only adjustment to employee contributions would be under HB 79. So
I understand that.
The scenario three in the current column would be unaffected. What would be lower would be the scenario three under the HB 79 column. Those contributions would be lower, and therefore the increase due to HB 79 under scenario three would be less than what we've shown here. But I have no way of knowing how much lower the increase would be, less than the 1.6 million. We'd have to model that.
Okay. So my question was, did you model it? And the answer you're saying is you didn't. So okay.
We did not.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Quick at ease.
Chair, I move the committee substitute for House Bill 79, Finance, version 31-LS0462/O from committee with the attached fiscal notes and individual committee recommendations.
Objection. There's an objection. Would you like to speak your objection? Madam Clerk, could you do a roll call? Representative Josephson?
Just a brief comment, and that is that in my 8 years here, this is among the more historic votes I'll have taken. I'm proud to take it. These are tough times. We know that. But I'm confident that this is the right path forward for public safety and for the citizens of the state, and excited to see what comes from this. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I want to echo the words of my colleague to the left of me. I think it's the right thing to do to move this bill. I also want to, just my recent questions to Mr. Kirshner, he had a model of different scenarios, and there is levers in the mechanism to adjust for bad market times where employees would kick in more. But the fact that he didn't model that to see what the difference would be, I'm just sort of, it's sort of interesting because it's a big part of the bill where employees would kick in a little more percentage, and then you could actually see what the difference is between now and the future. So I just find that interesting. But.
Representative Knopp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I guess I really have to say thank you to the sponsor because he did a lot of great work. And if we're ever going to go back to a defined benefit, this is probably the avenue to do so. And he did a great job on it. And I'm really on the fence whether it's workable or not. I don't think nobody really knows till we adopt it and see. My discomfort with it has always been that it's just one small group of employees, and I'm not going to support the bill today. And I think I might have at one point, but I think with Mr. Kushner's comments about in today's fiscal reality where we're at today, it's a whole different scenario. Had them numbers been reworked, we see where we're really at, where we might end up, because I felt for years, couple years now, that our markets have been artificially inflated, asset values have been unsustainable. We saw it time and time again with crude prices and these markets. So I don't think we're going to see asset values grow. I mean, I hope we don't see them grow like they have been anyway. A moderate percentage would be reasonable, but they haven't found a comfort level yet that I can get with, so I'm not going to support this bill today.
Representative Lebon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I might as well take a bite of this apple, too. I appreciate the effort by the sponsor to try to find a middle ground, a compromise, if you will, with a defined benefit plan. I guess I wish there was a mechanism to share the risk, the risk of an adjustment to the plan down the road with the contribution rate. You know, the state has that responsibility. The employee responsibility is capped right now at 10%, I believe. And maybe it can never be an equal shared risk from top to bottom. I wish there could be maybe a little bit more future skin in the game, should it be needed to adjust the contribution rate, not just the state, but also the participant. Thank you.
I'll do follow-up whenever you're ready.
Did you want to do a follow-up or the?
What is it, the closing?
I guess I will say that I think a lot of good points were brought out today, and I hope the sponsor of this bill, as he takes it to the floor and to the other body, that there might be actually a situation where there needs to be some new actuarial reports and adjustments. I will be voting for it to give the sponsor time to continue to work on this. Representative Carpenter.
Thank you. I believe wholeheartedly that there is a solution out there that better positions the public safety employee for retirement. I think we should continue looking for a better solution that does not include additional risk to the state for future years' taxpayers. And that's why I'll be voting no.
Could we have a roll call, please?
Representative Tilton.
Yeah.
Representative Wolf.
Yes.
Representative Carpenter.
No.
Representative Josephson.
Yes.
Representative Knopf.
No.
Representative Levon.
Yes.
Representative Merrick.
Yes.
Representative Ortiz.
Yes.
Representative Sullivan Leonard.
No.
Representative Johnston.
Yes.
Representative Foster.
Yes.
7 yeas and 4 nays.
With a vote of 7 yeas and 4 nays, House Bill 79 will be passed out of this committee. Thank you. Brief at ease. Bring this meeting back to order. We'll be actually taking up House Bill 181 next, which is the public schools mental health education. We have, I don't think we'll need a short introduction. We spent a long time on this, I think yesterday. I think that was when it was. But we do have a new fiscal note, and and online we have Aaron Harden and Lacey Sanders. Would either of you like to speak to the new fiscal note?
Yes, for the record, this is Lacey Sanders. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Thank you. Again, for the record, Lacey Sanders, Admin Services Director for the Department of Education and Early Development. The department did take into consideration the committee's request to reduce the costs and came forward with a revised fiscal note that you should have in front of you that totals $71,000. We have eliminated $12,000 for the creation and printing of standards booklets. We will work to make these standards available electronically to all of the school districts and staff that need this information. In addition, we will reduce travel costs from the 60,000 down to 30,000, as we will, given the environment that we're in right now, aim to conduct one meeting in person and utilize distance delivery to host that one remaining meeting with the members that are participating on the Anchorage meeting that we're hosting. And if there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer those for you.
Are there any questions? Are there any further comments from the committee? It is my intention to move this. I'm a little concerned we're missing two members. I'm going to take a brief at ease. Back to order. Co-chair Foster.
Yes, Madam Chair, I move the committee substitute for House Bill 181, Education, which is version 31-LS1146-M from committee with the attached fiscal note and individual committee recommendations.
Objection. There's an objection. Would you like to speak to your objection? Anybody else like to speak? Clerk, could we have a roll call, please?
Representative Wolf.
Yes.
Representative Carpenter.
No.
Representative Josephson.
Yes.
Representative Knapp.
Yes.
Representative Levon.
Yes.
Representative Merrick.
Yes.
Representative Ortiz.
Yes.
Representative Sullivan Leonard.
Nope.
Representative Tilton.
No.
Representative Foster.
Yes.
Representative Johnson.
Yes. Three nays. And with a vote of 8 yeas and 3 nays, House Bill 181 passes from committee. All right, folks, never mind. Okay. Our next meeting is Wednesday, March 18th, 2020. We will be meeting at 9 a.m. unless there are some other meetings that interrupt.
Fluid.
It's all very fluid at this point, and I apologize to committee members, but we all know we're in interesting times. On our agenda will be governor's confirmation hearings for Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority appointees, which is Anita Halterman and Rhonda Boyles. We'll be adding to the schedule House Bill 235, which is the Alaska Workforce Investment Board allocation, and House Bill 268. With that, we are adjourned at 4:23. Thank you.